اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد، اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أستغفر الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الحي القيوم الرحمن الرحيم الجلال والإكرام، وأتوب إليه. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله، السلام عليك يا ابن رسول الله، السلام عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين وابن سيد الوصين، السلام عليك يا ابن فاطمة سيدة نساء العالمين، السلام عليك يا ثار الله وابن ثاره والوتر الموتور، السلام عليك وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليكم مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار. يا أبا عبد الله، لقد عظمت الرزية وجلت وعظمت المصيبة بك علينا وعلى جميع أهل الإسلام، وجلت وعظمت مصيبتك في السماوات على جميع أهل السماوات. فلعن الله أمة أسست أساس الظلم والجور عليكم أهل البيت، ولعن الله أمة دفعتكم عن مقامكم وأزالتكم عن مراتبكم التي رتبكم الله فيها، ولعن الله أمة قتلتكم، ولعن الله الممهدين لهم بالتمكين من قتالكم. برئت إلى الله وإليكم منهم ومن أشيائهم وأتباعهم وأوليائهم. يا يا أبا عبد الله إني سلم لمن سلمكم وحرب لمن حربكم إلى يوم القيامة. ولعن الله آل زياد وآل مروان، ولعن الله بني أمية قاطبا، ولعن الله ابن مرجانا، ولعن الله عمر بن سعد، ولعن الله شمرا، ولعن الله أمة أسرجت وألجمت وتنقبت لقتالك بأبي أنت وأمي، لقد عظم مصابي بك، فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم اجعلني عندك وجيها بالحسين عليه السلام في الدنيا والآخرة. يا أبا عبد الله إني أتقرب إلى الله وإلى رسوله وإلى أمير المؤمنين وإلى فاطمة وإلى الحسن وإليك بموالاتك وبالبراءة ممن أسس أساس ذلك وبنى عليه وجرى في ظلمه وجوره عليكم وعلى أشياعكم، برئت إلى الله وإليكم منهم، وأتقرب إلى الله ثم إليكم بموالاتكم وموالاة وليكم وبالبراءة من أعدائكم والناصبين لكم الحرب وبالبراءة من أشياعهم وأتباعهم. إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حربكم وولي لمن والاكم وعدوم لمن عاداكم. فأسأل الله الذي أكرمني بمعرفتكم ومعرفة أوليائكم ورزقني البراءة من أعدائكم أن يجعلني معكم في الدنيا والآخرة، وأن يثبت لي عندكم قدم صدق في الدنيا والآخرة، وأسأله أن يبلغني المقام المحمود لكم عند الله، وأن يرزقني طلب ثاركم مع إمام هدى ظاهر ناطق بالحق منكم. وأسأل الله بحقكم وبالشأن الذي لكم عنده أن يعطيني بمصابي بكم أفضل ما يعطي مصابا بمصيبته، مصيبة ما أعظمها وأعظم رزيتها في الإسلام وفي جميع السماوات والأرض. اللهم اجعلني في مقامي هذا ممن تناله منك صلوات ورحمة ومغفرة. اللهم اجعل محياي محيا محمد وآل محمد، ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد. اللهم إن يوم عاشوراء يوم تبركت به بنو أمية وابن آكلة الأكباد اللعين ابن اللعين على لسانك ولسان نبيك صلى الله عليه وآله في كل موطن وموقف وقف فيه نبيك صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم لعن أبا سفيان ومعاوية ويزيد ابن معاوية عليهم منك اللعنة أبد الآبدين. ويوم عاشوراء يوم فرحت به آل زياد وآل مروان بقتلهم الحسين صلوات الله عليه. اللهم فضاعف عليهم اللعنة منك والعذاب الأليم. اللهم إني أتقرب إليك في هذا اليوم وفي موقفي هذا وأيام حياتي بالبراءة منهم واللعنة عليهم وبالموالاة لنبيك وآل نبيك عليه وعليهم السلام. اللهم لعن أول ظالمين ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع له على ذلك. اللهم لعن العصابة التي جاهدت الحسين وشايعت وبايعت وتابعت على قتله. اللهم لعنهم جميعا. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار، ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. اللهم خص أنت أول ظالم باللعن مني، وابدأ به أولا ثم العن الثانية والثالثة والرابع. اللهم العن يزيد خامسا، والعن عبيد الله ابن زياد وابن مرجان وعمر ابن سعد وشمرا وآل أبي سفيان وآل زياد وآل مروان إلى يوم القيامة. اللهم لك الحمد حمد الشاكرين لك على مصابهم. الحمد لله على عظيم رزيتي. اللهم ارزقني شفاعة الحسين يوم المرور، وثبت لي قدم صدق عندك مع الحسين وأصحاب الحسين الذين بذلوا مهجهم دون الحسين عليه السلام.
صلوات بر محمد و آل محمد. نہ پوچھ میرا حسین کیا ہے، سوچ میرا حسین کیا ہے, جہاں عزم وفا کا پیکر خیرت کا مرکز جنوں کا محور جمال زہرا جمال حیدر ضمیر انسان نصیر داور زمین کا دل آسمان کا یاور دیار صبر و رضا کا دلبر کمال عیسیٰ کا پیمبر عرب کا صحرا عجم کا زیور حسین تصویر انبیاء ہے, نہ پوچھ میرا حسین کیا ہے, حسین دل ہے حسین جاں ہے, حسین قرآن کی زباں ہے, حسین عرفاں کی سلطنت ہے, حسین سرکار دو جہاں ہے, حسین سجدوں کی سر زمین ہے, حسین ذہنوں کا آسماں ہے, نہ پوچھ میرا حسین کیا ہے, حسین دل ہے حسین جاں ہے, حسین قرآن کی زباں ہے, حسین زخموں بھری جبیں ہے, حسین عظمت کا آستاں ہے, اٹھا رہا ہے جو لاش اکبر حسین بوڑھا نہیں جوان ہے, نہ پوچھ میرا حسین کیا ہے, حسین دل ہے حسین جاں ہے, حسین قرآن کی زباں ہے, صلوات پر محمد و آل محمد.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. We will be broadcasting the speech on 90.5 FM. Please tune your radios to 90.5 FM if you would like to listen to the speech in your car. If you would like to sit on the ground in front of the member, please respect social distancing and sit on the X's marked in blue on the ground. As you trial this new format of drive-in programs this year, we ask you all to please abide by the following guidelines so we can all keep each other safe during these uncertain times. If you need to leave your car, please observe 6 feet physical distance and wear a face mask. If you would like to come outside to your car for Latmia, please spread out as much as possible and stand on the X's marked on the ground in order to maintain social distance. Please do not bring any food items for distribution from home. Packaged tabaruk and drinks will be provided at the center on your way out after the program, following all health guidelines. If you would like to sponsor a program, please speak to a volunteer. Please do not litter the parking lot. Use the trash bins placed at the entrance. And the indoor facility will be limited to bathroom use only on an individual basis. We also have a sanitizing station by the entrance for your convenience. Lastly, please follow all volunteer instructions. These are unique times and we appreciate your patience with these guidelines. Please recite a Surah Fatiha for the Shuhada of Islam, the Marhumin named in our memorial plaque, and for all Marhumin. With that, I would like to welcome Hujjat al-Islam, Sheikh Hamza Sodagar, to deliver his message. Salawat.
InshaAllah, each and every one of you is accepted by Imam al-Hussein and the Lady Fatima al-Zahra. Your efforts and all, for all the shuhada and all the marhumin of all those who've contributed. Let's recite Surah al-Fatiha, followed by three Qul huwallahu ahad. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الله أحد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا أحد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين، لتراب مقدمه الفداء ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening return of our Imam, let's recite a salawat. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. إن شاء الله. For his health and well-being, let's recite the second one louder. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Hopefully, asking Allah to make us, each of every one of us, a true and close companion of that Imam. Let's recite a third salawat louder. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjal farajahum. One of the reminders of Karbala, one of the areas that Imam al-Husayn salamullah alayh was active in Karbala, before it, during it, and the Ahlul Bayt after Karbala, the family of the Imam, that helps us with getting closer to the spirit of Karbala, to hayhat min al-dhilla, to amr bil ma'ruf wa nahi 'an al-munkar, the way the Imam wants and the way the Imam did it, is the way Imam al-Husayn dealt with the opinions of others, the views of others, especially when, like in the incident and event of Ashura, it was a very serious opposition. This is one of the forms of sabr, which is one of the most difficult forms of sabr. If we think being patient in the face of a calamity like losing a loved one is difficult, that patience compared to patience in this arena, in this context, against this difficulty, is much greater, much more difficult, much more rewarding. We deal with this on a regular basis. All of us have dealt with this to a certain degree. We identify something to be right, something to be correct, something to be haq. It's clear to us. Then we hear opposition. We hear people speaking against that directly to us. Sometimes they speak to someone else and that makes its way to us. We hear through two or three different people that this person that we thought was a close friend, a relative, someone that knew us, someone that was close to us, someone that was in the same line of thinking and the same way of thinking, now that I have said this is the right thing to do, this is what we want to do, whatever it is, a haq, a truth, a taklif that we have understood we need to do, we start hearing, this person said this about it, that person said this is a dumb idea. How how do we respond to that? How do we react to that? How do we behave in the face of this form of opposition? This is before even getting to a battlefield. Many times when there is a battlefield, a challenge of that nature, some, because of their anger, because now it looks bad to not fight, they fight. In the street, when someone challenges you, a lot of us feel obligated to react to that because I want to prove that I have the guts. I'm the man. I'm the boss. You can't speak to me like that. You can't challenge me. And so there's no thought, there's no wisdom. We just go out and do that. Fighting in itself can be less. Fighting in Karbala wasn't like that, of course, obviously. But the point is, what we're focusing on right now is not the idea of facing swords and spears and arrows and 30,000 people on the battlefield. This is when people tell you it's going to end in that, not when it's already ended. Not when you've already arrived there. Not when you already have that opposition holding their swords, spears, arrows, everything against you. When you want to start something, when you want to take a stance, when you want to set up a majlis, when you want to write something, an article, put something up on social media, whatever it is, a haq, a truth, that is not about you in your home, it's something that is outside of that. Many times we face opposition on different levels. Sometimes it could be as simple as wanting to give charity to someone and then somebody else says, oh, they're losers, they're going to use that for drugs. And so for you, the reason why you wanted to give it was, it was clear to you this person needs help. You knew maybe they're going to use it for that, but you saw that it's one of those instances that it's better to help. Okay, I'm not encouraging that anywhere anyone asks, we must give. No. On the other hand, I don't think Islam says whenever you see someone that's dressed in clothing that is not presentable, it's dirty, it's filthy, it's clear they have not showered for a good amount of time, and you know they're probably homeless, this means they're losers and you should never help them, it's their fault, let them die. That's not Islam's approach either. So if at some point you decided, you know what, this is a time for the sake of Allah, I want to give this. And then somebody says something that makes you feel a certain way about that, not because of the haqq, not because of them presenting you a reason why it's wrong. There's a time where a brother, a sister, they're supposed to, if they see something wrong with what I'm doing, they're supposed to present that to me. They're supposed to. And when they do, they have to explain it. This is what Islam says. I think you're missing. I think you maybe you didn't notice, you didn't realize that this person at this point, these are the signs. You shouldn't help him financially. If you want to help him in a different way, go ahead. I'm not going to stop you. Maybe get him a fruit, get him a burger, get him something. But don't give him money. It seems like he's not in the... And the person will say, I'm not sure. You know, you go based on your judgment, but I noticed this. I want to let you know. You think about it, you realize, yeah, I didn't notice that. He's right or she's right. I need to do that. That's a different scenario. That's a different thing. Imam al-Hussein came out and said, we need to rise against Yazid. We should not allow him to be the Khalifa. Muawiyah promised that after him, he's going to hand it over to the Ahlul Bayt. Now he's given it to Yazid. Yazid is ABCD, described Yazid. So we can't allow him to be Khalifatu Rasulullah. Can't allow him to be the Wali of the Muslimin, the ruler, the governor over the Muslimin.
What's the response? Did they say, Ya Hussein, but this verse of the Quran says it this way, and then they explain it, and Imam al-Hussein is like, oh, well obviously Imam al-Hussein is the Imam, he knows, he's the living Quran. If we were in that position, do they come to the companions, let's go with the companions, with the family, do they come to them and say, the verse of the Quran says this with this reason and so on, and then the Ahlul Bayt say, or the companions of the Imam say that, no, I don't want to hear this, I don't want to listen to it, I just made up my mind. No, it's the other way around. Imam al-Hussein kept explaining and giving reasons why this is what must be done. This is a time to rise. This is a time to not give in. This is a time to break this government, the rules of this government, the iron fist of this government. On the other hand, what's the response coming from them? It's useless. Is that what the Quran says? If you feel you don't think it's going to have fruits, you don't see it having results, you don't see it causing Yazid to go down, that you shouldn't rise? The Quran has answered that. I don't want to get into that specific arena. The idea is, what's being presented is not haqq. So up to this point, we can conclude the following. When you see as non-ma'sumin, we're not ma'sum. We're not like the Imam. He has knowledge that we don't have. Whatever he says, whatever he does is right. We can't compare ourselves to him. Anyone who stood up to Imam al-Hussein said, but what about this? What about that? If they were trying to convince him that his decision is wrong, they should have already realized that they are wrong to even begin in that process. And for us, for Imam al-Hujjah, we need to practice this. This is logic. This is reason. Imam al-Hujjah has access to knowledge that you and I don't. If he says drive 180 miles per hour into that wall, don't say, but there's a wall there. Just start driving 180 miles. He knows what you don't know. Don't think he missed something. And try it, and then you'll see, just like that story that's been narrated in the Manaqib of Ibn Shahr Ashub. The author is Ibn Shahr Ashub. The book is known as Manaqib. I'm not sure if the full title is Manaqibu Ali Abi Talib or Manaqibu Ali ibn Abi Talib, something along, but it's known as Manaqib of Ibn Shahr Ashub. The story is about Imam As-Sadiq's time, Salamullahi Alayhi. People came, you've heard the story probably many times. They came and they said, you have in Khurasan, which is portions, not all of current day Iran and Afghanistan, and maybe part of Pakistan as well, Balochistan, this area. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. Anyway, Khurasan is an area that includes also part of Turkmenistan of today. He came, he said, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, you have many followers, you have swords, why aren't you rising, and so on and so forth. He said, oh really, that many followers? And yeah, he said, you see that oven? Step into that oven, it's heated, you could see the flames. This man says, obviously, you know. It's like that. If the Imam were here, he'd say, look, I want you to drive 180 miles towards that wall. Get a car that can do that. Get a Lambo or something. Because my Corolla can't do that. The distance from here to that wall is too short to get to 180. If he stands there, you need to find a vehicle that can go 180 towards that wall and go. Okay, I would say, well, ya baqiyatullah, you know. I said I will give my life, but really, I mean, do you want me to give it in this way? The person said, you know, what do you want me to do? Kill myself? And then one of the companions of Imam al-Sadiq came, as soon as he came, he said, go into that oven. That person went into the oven. Burning hot flames coming. The Imam let him stay for a few minutes and then told the other companion, go and check him out. Sitting there, it's not burning. If God doesn't want it to, it won't. If the Ahlul Bayt, bi-idhnillah, if the Ahlul Bayt don't want it to, bi-idhnillah, it won't burn. If he's telling you to sit in the oven,
He's in control of that fire burning. Listen.
Okay.
That's for the imam. Anyone that stands, unless they're asking for their clarification, saying, I apologize, I would like to understand this. I don't understand this. Is it a time that I could understand? In this way, yes, ask a question. But don't question in the sense of suggesting that he didn't see something that you saw. He didn't know of something that you knew. But we're not like that. We don't have that. Allah has not given me that. He hasn't given any of us, at least as some of the students of the Anbiya and the A'imma, reach levels where certain levels of knowledge were given to them. Yes, we know. This is clear. If you get closer to the Ahlul Bayt, some of that knowledge will be given to you. مَنْ كَانَ عِنْدَهُ عِلْمٌ مِنَ الْكِتَابِ Like Asif ibn Barkhiya, as they call him, if I pronounce the name properly, the companion of Sulaiman in the story of the Queen of Saba and bringing her throne to the Holy Lands. He's a companion of a prophet. He's given knowledge that an ordinary person doesn't. We can get some knowledge, but not like that. We can never be like the Ahlul Bayt. We can't be, never, no one. So from our end, for us, if we see something that's right, a haq that we need to stand for, a stance we need to take, what are we supposed to do? Well, if you see it's right, if you see doing this thing is right, you're supposed to act. Another brother, another sister, if they see this is not right, they're supposed to tell you, brother, sister, I think for these reasons. I, as a recipient, I thought this was right. Someone comes and tells me, am I supposed to start shouting at them in their face, no, you're Ahlul Batil, this, that, the other? I'm like, well, I'm not ma'asum. Let me hear them out. Let me hear what they have to say. You explain. They explain. You ask them, please, can you explain? Explain. You listen to that. I don't know. I don't have ilm al-ghaym. I heard you, but for these reasons, I don't understand why you're saying that. I think what you're saying is not right. And still what I'm saying, it's clear to me that's right. I'm going to continue with that. In fact, Imam al-Husayn salamullah alayh, who is the ma'soom, who is the one that does not make any mistakes whatsoever. Nothing is a mistake. Nothing is a mistake in the life of a ma'soom. Absolutely nothing. Nothing is haphazard. Nothing is an accident in a ma'soom's life. Those, the 14 ma'asumin. The 14 ma'asumin. Not even the anbiya are different. These 14 ma'asumin are different compared to all other people, every single other soul, other prophets, other great prophets. These 14 ma'asumin are different. This is based on our references. I'm not making this up. We have clear ahadith, not one or two, a number of them. If anybody has any doubts, that can be discussed and clarified at some other point. The imam, who is a ma'asum, when he says this is what we need to do, he doesn't say shut up and do what I'm telling you. When they talk to him, he doesn't shoot them down by telling them don't talk. He allows them to speak. After they speak, he presents his side. He explains, for these reasons, no, it should be done. And each of them, a response that is worthy for that question, for that person. For us, if we get something, we need to honestly analyze, yes. So this is not something we're talking about here, and we're not neglecting this aspect of us not being ma'asum. The idea is this, sometimes, and this is the patience we were talking about, sometimes it's clear, this is what the Quran says. One simple example that I can tell you, all of us experience, is being a Muslim, practicing Islam. We know Islam is right, right? None of us have any question. We know Islam is right. If you have any questions, go clarify those questions. If you have any doubts, go get them cleared up. Wallah, the moment I have been taught of Islam, I have seen it right. Anywhere there was a question, a problem, wallah, anytime anyone raised it and I thought about it and I looked for answers, I saw the Quran and Hadith, the Ahlul Bayt and their students have clear answers. There's never been, these almost 40 years, never been a matter that is a dead end, don't ask, there's no response. No, Islam is very clear. You're crystal clear, Islam is right, but when I want to pray in an airport, international airport, if there isn't already a prayer place like LAX, this huge airport with all these Muslims, the believers now are working on having one apparently, and I heard that it seems like they've got some approvals. But you find airports, there's no, you want to pray, we feel shy. Why? Are you clear? Are you not clear this is right? Absolutely. Why are you shy? What's the problem? What's the problem with standing in the... I remember since childhood there were those who would tell me that no, we shouldn't pray standing up in the prayer. But with what reason? What's the... I was told as a child before going to the Hawza that, you know, this is how it's supposed to be. Just pray in your seat. Like, okay, I don't know. Well, we pray in our seat. Later on, I read the Rasala. It says, no, if you can stand, you have to stand. I'm like, in the plane, are we allowed to stand? Post 9/11, so childhood is pre 9/11. It was a lot easier then. Post 9/11, people are afraid. They're like, oh, if I start praying in the back, they're going to think I'm going to hijack this plane. So let's not do this. Well, is that real or is that just a fear, a phobia? Let's test it. I think the first time I did this after knowing it, the first travel that came up, I was on KLM, a European non-Muslim. None of them at least appear to be Muslim. I went in the back and said, I need to pray. Can I pray back here? I didn't want to be in, you know, I didn't mind people seeing me, but I didn't want to be where I'm in people's ways. And back there, you know, you're visible. If anybody comes back there or the flight attendants, they're back there, they see you. But in terms of being in the way, I don't want to be in the way. So find a little corner there. Can I pray here? Instead of, you know, I don't know, calling the federal marshal or I don't know, some police, said, they fixed up the curtains, here's a mat. Assalamu alaikum. The lady was actually, she wasn't wearing hijab, but she was a Muslimah. Dutch nationality, of course, origins, probably somewhere in Northern Africa. Anyhow, the reason why we don't do it is a phobia. There's no reason. Islam didn't say, nobody. In your mind, you're afraid of everybody. What people say about you, what people think about you, is a reason for you not to do something that's right. This is what we're talking about. When people start saying wrong things, although it's clear to you what you're doing is right, what you had decided to do is right, it's clear, here's the evidence. But this person said this, that person started laughing, this guy says this guy's an idiot. The other person said he's stupid. 5, 6 people, 10 people, then you start hearing uproar, social media, this guy said, you start backing down. Why? Did you see that what you did was wrong based on a verse, based on Quranic teachings? It's clear to you that I couldn't take it. Couldn't take it. Imam al-Hussein is a great example for this, the patience he had from day one of his official start. Before that, there are instances as well. I don't want to get into that. From day one of starting this, from his family members, there's opposition. It's difficult. Family members give you opposition sometimes if you have a close relationship with them. If you don't care about them, they live on their own somewhere. You don't even see them, barely anything, which is not a good thing. But sometimes it happens. You don't really care about their view. But if they're close, you're with them, you see them, you talk to them, you're close in your views, they agree with you, you agree with them. And now this situation is coming. Opposition. 1, 2, 3, in the family. Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiya, Abdullah ibn Ja'far, others, opposition to Imam al-Husayn. Besides the common, these are the close ones. These are the people that are close to him. These are the people not who are close to him in terms of their bloodline, in terms of their family ties. These are people who are close to him ideologically, and this is what makes it even more difficult. He goes to Mecca, he speaks to all these people. What is the response he's getting? If I, as an example that I can understand to help me understand the context of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. You all have come here for Imam al-Husayn. Doesn't matter if this is the speaker or whoever else. It's for Imam al-Husayn. You guys are here. This is Muharram. You heard there's a Muharram program. You've come here. I, as a speaker, have a responsibility to come here and deliver what Islam has said to the best of my ability. Whatever shortcomings I have, we ask Allah to forgive. Best of my ability, I'm supposed to show. On my part, if I come here, or if any of you had the responsibility, just think of this. People have gathered here for Islam, and then I start speaking. Everybody starts speaking amongst themselves. Just ignoring, even if they just ignore. What happens? Instead of you listening, you're all sitting all silently, just listening to in whatever means you have to what is being said here. If instead of this, I would start hearing chit-chat, chatter, people talking. They don't care. Speakers are blasting. And back then there were no speakers. They're just doing their thing. I wouldn't feel like continuing with my talk. Like, what am I wasting my breath on? It was your responsibility to speak. Doesn't matter how many people listen. If what you're saying is right, say it. But no, I see that. If then, worse than that, if the people start behaving in a different way, they start leaving, then they start saying bad things. Then the authorities, they line up police cars here and they want this guy. All of you guys like, yeah, go get him. Who the heck is this guy? What would be my feeling towards continuing? If it was that one taklif, the imam of my time had said, for an hour you need to sit there and talk. I wouldn't feel like talking anymore. Well, did I receive another command telling me that I should stop? No. Why would I not want to talk? Because so many people are against it. So many people that were with me, I'm not talking about the kuffar over there, there's a concert or, I don't know, live music playing over there in that shopping center. You can hear it. I'm not talking about them, who cares? I'm talking about you. Muslimin were there with Imam al-Husayn. People who knew him, companions of the Prophet, tabi'een that knew him. Imam al-Husayn is not an unknown figure. He's the grandson of the Prophet, the only one alive, the only male alive. Amongst Muslimin, you say you want to do this, there's opposition after opposition after opposition, abandonment. People join you, then leave you. That's hurt so much. You have a couple of those. You're devastated. Being able to continue despite all this opposition from people that are close to you, sometimes some of the closest, this is a patience that's very difficult. It's very difficult to have, brothers and sisters. The Imam al-Husayn teaches us this, and we got to look up to him. We need this. The Quran talks about it. It says it. The Quran says it in this way. وَلَا يَلُومَنَّ فِي اللَّهِ لَوْمَةَ لَائِمٍ. If I got the wording right, I'm not 100% sure all those words were pronounced right. A person, a believer, those are real believers who لَوْمَةُ لَائِمْ, the scolding, the opposition, saying wrong things about your decision, being unhappy about your decision. فِاللَّهِ, of course. If what you're doing is for Allah, your intention is for Allah, and it's clear to you this is what Allah wants.
No matter who's called you, who says negative things, opposition, it doesn't hurt you. This is what Allah wants. I don't care what the world could go against me. This is some serious patience Imam al-Hussein had. Especially since some of the things that they were saying was not reason, was not logic, was not Quran or Hadith, but it was a fact that was predictable, that would make a decision even more difficult. For instance, that they're going to kill you. Whoever comes with you, they're going to kill you. Well, he knows they're going to kill him. No one's going to join you. Imam al-Hussein is calling to people to join. Let's not forget, let me clarify this bit too. Imam al-Hussein did not leave Medina to simply go over there to a place where they're going to slaughter him, although he knew that's the ending. Imam al-Hussein started an uprising against the status quo, against Yazid, against the establishment, against the Umayyad dynasty, against the direction that the Muslimin are allowing the Taghut to take them towards. And the ultimate goal that he was aiming for, in the sense of the better of the two ways this could have panned out, was to overthrow Yazid, gather troops. That's what he was telling people. Join me, we'll do this together. We need to do this together. Well, they're saying nobody's going to come. Well, he knows nobody's going to come, but he still calls people to come. We need to do this. Come, it is possible. He knows it won't happen in the end. He's still calling. Why? Because it's his job to call people. If they don't come, they're going to be responsible. If he didn't call people to come, it would have been his shortcoming. He called people to come. It's his taklif. All the way to the last moment. Imam al-Hussein's call in Karbala, هَلْ مِنْ نَاصِرٍ يَنْصُرُنِي, is not the call of a weak person that is seeing death before their eyes, that is trying to escape that and is asking for someone to help them. Imam al-Hussein's call, هَلْ مِنْ نَاصِرٍ يَنْصُرُنِي, هَلْ مِنْ ذَابٍ يَذُبُّ عَنْ حَرَمِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ, is a call to wake the conscience of the people there. Perhaps a few more people will join the فِئَةُ أَهْلِ الْحَقِّ, the people that are moving in the right direction to save them. Imam al-Hussein did not cease to call people towards that. Despite all of this opposition. We need this, brothers and sisters. We need this. When we want to do the right thing, sometimes our brethren get in our way. Why? Because like the people at that time, they have been affected by this status quo, the conditions of society, the mindset of the wider society that we are in, and wanting to assimilate, wanting to be part of this, wanting not to stand out, keeping that minimal. If I can't get rid of hijab because it's just not possible, well, let's minimize differences on all levels. People are affected by this. You want to do the right thing in cases where wider society does not accept, and then there's opposition even from within the Muslim community. We have to learn this from Ashura, from Imam al-Hussein. This is not a reason to give up. People disagreeing is not a reason. Listen to their arguments. If they provide reasons. A lot of times they don't. We've experienced this. Those who say we need to work with logic and reason. Reason is important. Intellect, intelligence, discussions are important. When it comes to areas where they feel their material gains, their material interests, their
image as someone that appeals to the kuffar, someone who appeals to the liberal Muslims, not the real Muslims, is at stake. There is no reason presented. There's no logic given. There's no talk. It's like, I have this position, you have to listen to me. Excuse me, you're not the Imam of our time. You're not ma'asum. We're explaining why we're doing this. If you think it's wrong, talk, explain why, and then we'll listen. We've got to make sure we don't consider the opposition of people in itself to be a reason for us to divert, to sidetrack, to leave, to not pursue what we saw is our taklif. Especially again when it's the close ones, when it's the Shia community. We shouldn't think that if the Shia community, a number of them, are against us, that means we're doing something wrong. That's part of what we're trying to clarify. That isn't a reason that what we're doing is wrong. We've got to look at Quran and Hadith. The same way that the rest of Muslimin, Shias say this, I don't agree with this type of reasoning and argument, but they say, well, the majority are going astray. Well, who said the majority of you who identify as Shia are going on the right path? It's not about what we identify as, we call ourselves, put that title. Being a Shia is not by what you're called by birth, at birth, what your parents are, or even what you convert to. You say, I have adopted the lifestyle, the culture, the ideology, the beliefs of tashayyu. Okay? That's what you're saying, but I'm looking at the Quran. If you're a Shia, you should be following the Quran and the living Qurans. Looking in the Quran says this, you're saying something different. Imam al-Husayn showed that. And inshallah, we learn that from Imam al-Husayn, salawatullah wa salamu alayhi. As difficult as it is, again, I said this last night as well, this is very easy to say. It's very difficult to do when we're in that time. It needs a lot of tawassul. Always, whenever we see the truth, we see haq, whatever level of it you see, grab a hold of it, do it, take it, act based on what you are sure is right. Even if it's small, simple, that will be a practical dua, asking Allah for more guidance, because you have proven that if He shows you something, you do it. He says, okay, I'll give you more. If He shows you, like, well, I see it, but my mom said this, my dad, I'm giving drastic examples so we know. The Quran says your parents should not be a reason to go against Islam either. If this is right, my parents say it's wrong. The Quran says you got to go with what haq is that you're seeing. It's clarified in the Quran. Respect parents. But if what you see is haq, this is what the Quran says, they say otherwise, you can't go with what they say. You've got to go with what the Quran says. If we act in these smaller instances based on what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, this is a practical dua. Allah will show us more and we'll get more clarity. And then in the context of those difficult times, those fitan, the likes of, on our level, Karbala is too big for us. We're too small for the like of Karbala, for the likes of Karbala, something like that. It's too big for us, too grand. Something much, much smaller, but for us it's difficult, a fitna. And those times, Do tawassul to Imam al-Husayn. Remember this condition of Imam al-Husayn. Your Imam is left alone. The manifestation of Haqq, the manifestation of the Qur'an, every aspect of this being is Qur'an, is Allah. The face of Allah is being abandoned. He doesn't abandon his post. We see that, we do tawassul to him. Imam al-Husayn will take your hand. Imam al-Husayn will give you that strength to be able to stand there. And he will help you with that clarity. Wallah, he will. God knows he will. Imam al-Hujjah is the Mahdi. He will help you. You tawassul sincerely. Whatever you, I don't know. I don't have knowledge. I don't know things. I'm limited. I even look at the Quran, I can't understand. You know, I'm asking you. God has put you, He's given you everything, and I have nothing. I'm coming to you, I'm asking you for this. Please, whatever you say, I'm going to do, and be genuine and sincere. Imam al-Husayn will show you, and he will help you. He will help you, inshallah. He helps us. These fitan are to come. Islam is on the rise. Islam today is on the rise. And barriers are going to be broken for Islam. Obstacles will be removed. By whom? By you. By mu'mineen and mu'minat. With the strength of iman. We have got to look up to Karbala. Look at those difficult times Imam al-Husayn stood his grounds and he continued. These are the times of triumph and victory. These are the times that when they want to get close to the mu'mineen, they think twice. They shot their drone down and listen to the beat up, ridiculous accounts of what that session, this book of John Bolton, this maniac, has been printed recently. And just read the parts about the session they had, the so-called national security, I don't know if it's a council, whatever, the president and these clowns are sitting there. Just think, the head of this session is Mr. Trump. Hilarious. God knows what's coming of this country. Anyhow, just look at the conversations. And it's clear it's misled. In other words, he's not telling the truth of what happened there. But what he is saying is, look at how they're dealing with this. The believers in Iraq are not allowing the parliament made it law that the government must make the U.S. troops to leave. And inshallah, all of U.S. influence. Well, that's the shaitan over there. As Imam Khomeini said, the great Satan, the U.S. government. And it's not new. Anyone who looks at the history of the United States government can see this great Satan from the moment of his conception and existence, the so-called revolution and independence. Anyhow, these are the days that Islam is strong, mu'mineen are strong. The parliament in Iraq issued that. Now the mujahideen are making sure, because America is playing tricks here, is trying to bribe some figures, do this, do that, make it difficult. We're not going to let you do this. They're causing casualties for them, and they're claiming it. They're not like these CIA-made agents that hide. They claim it, like, we did this. The ones that they didn't do, they don't claim. The ones they have done. You can't decide to play with the fate of the Muslimin. These are the days of the strength of Islam, and Islam is on the rise. It's getting stronger and stronger, and the kuffar are getting weaker and weaker. If Imam al-Husayn, for the sake of Islam and upholding the banner of Islam and doing his share in making Islam prevail over the face of the earth, in those difficult times was patient and stood, we can face a little bit of opposition, brothers and sisters. They massacred his family. Do you see a massacre like that if you stand here at least? Do you see a massacre like that? The Imam of the Muslimin left alone like that. They put a disrespectful cartoon in some Arab country against one of our maraja in Iraq, and an outroar. These are not those times. We can be a little patient in the face of some opposition, and inshallah we're moving in that direction to see the Imam of our time, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. We've got to be stronger. We've got to, inshallah, be able to stand in these times. And we ask the Imam of our time to help us. Sallallahu alayk. Ya Abu Abdullah, inshallah, Allah help us with the tawassul. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help us, make it possible for us to, inshallah, be able to visit Karbala, visit Imam al-Husayn. One of the first shuhada of the movement of Imam al-Husayn is Muslim ibn Aqil. As a disciple of the Imam, as a companion of the Imam, as a representative of the Imam, he also stood his grounds to the last of his, to the best of his ability. Kufa, that's difficult as well. He didn't abandon his post. Just imagine, first, initially, all people coming to you, pledging allegiance, asking you to come to their house, respect, this, that, the other. In a matter of days, people don't want to see you. They don't want to be seen with you. They don't want to pray behind you. They come in the masjid and they start chattering. And eventually the masjid is empty. The only one that's there is Muslim and a couple other people walking in the streets of Kufa all by himself, but not abandoning his post. Sallallahu alayk. Inshallah, we get to go to Kufa and visit the grave of Muslim in Masjid Kufa. صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله صلى الله عليك يا مظلوم أيها الشهيد بكربلاء عطشانا May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you, my beloved Imam al-Husayn. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you, my beloved oppressed Imam. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon you and your dry lips and your dry tongue,
He was slaughtered by the shores of the Euphrates while his mouth was dry of thirst. It seems like all the shuhada of Karbala are supposed to be martyred with dry lips and tongues. Muslim asked for water in Darul Imara, but his lips were bleeding. He tried to have a sip. He saw that the bowl of water got all bloody. He asked for another cup. Some have said he was granted it again. It was filled with blood. He realized there's something preventing him. I'm not supposed to have water at this point. Imagine Muslim on the roof of Darul Imara moments before they severed his noble head. He's facing Mecca, where he knows Imam al-Husayn is. In his heart he's saying, Sallallahu alayki ya Husayn. I apologize for sending you the letter saying that the people are ready. I apologize for not being able to notify you. I wish I could write you a letter, Ya Hussein, telling you not to come to Kufa. Hussein, don't come to Kufa. I see them buying new swords. Don't come to Kufa. I see them sharpening their blades. Don't come to Kufa. These people know no loyalty. Don't come to Kufa. Ya Hussein, I can see Harmala preparing his arrows. Don't come to Kufa. Ya Hussein, I see Shem preparing his dagger. Don't come to Kufa. I wish I could prevent you from coming, Ya Mawla. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون يا حسين.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein. Hashr mein rang laega, khune shahidan dekhna. Hashr mein rang laega, khune shahidan dekhna. Hashr mein rang laega, khune shahidan dekhna. Aayengi jab Fatima, آئیں گی جب فاطمہ حال پریشان دیکھنا حشر میں رنگ لائے گا خون شہیداں دیکھنا حشر میں رنگ لائے گا خون شہیداں دیکھنا روبرو بابا کے جا خاتون جنت آئیں گی خالی جوہر